Okay, Blake, I've been working on some jingles for our new website launch. So I've got churchy, churchy, church, church gear.
Toby, what have I told you about singing on the podcast? It doesn't work. But you know what is working? Our new website. You can actually get it to load on your phone. You can actually buy a new piece of gear without your phone bursting into flames.
Well, what if I spelled it out like C-H-U-R-C-G-E-R?
Toby, stop. That is not working. But you know what is working? The search bar on our website. You can actually search speakers and speakers will appear. No joke, that didn't always work.
Okay, what if I just did something like go to churchgear.com?
You know what? That one works.
Blake, what's the first thing that pops into your head when I say Florida man?
Well, after all your recent trips there, I'd say you.
Welcome to the Church Gear Podcast, where we pull the tech out of the booth and onto the stage to share the most outlandish stories and hidden wisdom from the tech trenches. And now, here are your hosts.
I'm your host, Blake Hodges, a man who is jealous he can't randomly go to Florida on the company dime. And I'm here with my co-host who has found a genius way to make Florida trips his job and maybe even a tax write-off, Toby Walters.
Yeah, I feel like a very blessed man when...
You should.
So, first of all, I had to... And I think we're in the new year now, Blake, as people are listening to this, right?
We are. This might actually even be our 100th episode that we didn't even know until this moment.
Well, that's fun. And if we rewind just a little bit where we're living now, we're in budget season. So we're trying to desperately finish our 2024 budget at the end of 23.
You are. I'm spending and praying. I'm spending and praying. I had Frank up my credit card limit the other day. I said, Toby said it was good.
So I'm wondering if our listeners are thinking to themselves, I wonder if Toby like really loves budgeting. And or if most of our listeners are like, that sounds like the last thing Toby wants to do. So instead of budgeting, I flew to Detroit in the winter. And Blake, I don't know if you know anything about Michigan in the winter, but it's generally speaking pretty cold.
I think that's where they shot Game of Thrones on all those winter scenes. I have a great photo that I should post of Toby during the budget meeting where he literally got behind a couch.
I was stretching, but it straight up looks like I am hiding from a monster.
You look terrified.
So I got to visit some of our church friends in outside of the Detroit area in some of the suburbs. I got to go to Northridge Church and hang out with Brandon Schultz. That was super cool. They have Blake, I know this means nothing to you, but they have a pair of Digico SD7s. At their front of house. One's for monitors, one's for front of house. But does that, you know...
That means something. I know that people like to fight on the internet about whether Digico or Yamaha is the best. And people fight about it like they do college sports. I mean, it's pretty nuts.
And regardless of which one you think is best, like the SD7, it's like the flagship model, a few years ago before they came out with the Quantum series. When I told Drew that, he got very excited. I think he booked himself a trip to Detroit just to hang out with these SD7s. But that was fun to kind of see their setup. And then I went over to another church called Brightmoor Church in another suburb and got to hang out with their production director, Jimmy Herr. And Jimmy is one of the most... So first of all, he is production director and IT.
That's a lot of stuff to do.
And that's what I said. That sounds like a lot. And this is a big church. Like they even have a school there as well.
Well, if the internet goes down, he doesn't get to send an email to the IT guy. He gets to look in the mirror and say, what happened? And then he has to go fix it.
And... I was truly impressed by just the sheer organization that he has created in the production and IT department. I guess he has to if he's doing both. But he got a unique opportunity with that church where, and I know so many of our listeners right now are cringing at the missed opportunity that for themselves, but Jimmy got to be in on the planning phase for their worship center. So before, you know, an architect even started drawing, he was in those meetings. And coming from a touring background, he was able to specify certain things. So he, like, first of all, has all the rigging from the roof that he could ever need, basically. And so many churches that I've been to recently, like, they're putting up huge LED walls now and having to figure out, like, how are we going to hang these things? Are we going to ground stack? Because their roofs weren't designed to handle tens of thousands of pounds of LED walls.
Are you telling me it's important that the LED wall is secured?
Typically, that's a good thing, so people don't die. And secondly, he has an entire map of where every conduit, like, starts and ends.
Did he also in the planning phase put a mausoleum in there for him to be buried in this church? Because it sounds like he has created his tech heaven.
I wouldn't be surprised just how organized it was. And then my favorite part, and I think honestly his favorite part, he said, okay, we're going to have to be able to back a semi truck into our backstage. So a semi can literally back up their ramp into their backstage area and unload. Like if a tour comes through, they can unload their semi inside. Like that's, I think that's the first time I've ever seen that at a church, and they can roll everything right on a stage through a roll up door.
I mean, you're describing a tech's dream, but I guess he really got to do the dreaming. This is incredible.
It was amazing. And then he showed me his office as well. He has master control in his office. So he has like the entire campus Wi-Fi, like all the frequencies there. He has the whole like door security map there. So he can control everything from his office. He doesn't even actually like typically sit at front of house or anywhere on a Sunday morning. He's usually like hanging out in his office.
You know how Toby in every superhero movie, there's the guy in the chair. He has created the ability. He's the guy in the chair at that church.
He's like, he's the good version of the evil super genius. But he's a good guy, you know?
No, like every, come on, man. Well, I guess maybe this just shows the era I came up in Disney Channel, but every hero like Kim Possible had Wade is a tech guy in a chair, like 50 screens and he could help her anywhere in the world. And so he's now the guy like Spider-Man. Did you see the new Spider-Man?
I don't know. There's so many of them that honestly, I don't know if I've seen the new one.
Toby, your pop culture knowledge is so lacking right now.
I know. And so, this was a super fun trip, even though it was Michigan in winter. But to make up for it with myself, I've already booked a trip to go to Florida in January. So I'm going to be okay, Blake. I know you were worried about me.
I was concerned. I was seeing some gray forming in your hair literally as the budget meeting was going on.
But actually, you know, as this episode comes out, I might literally be in Southern Florida visiting churches. I'm a very smart man, Blake.
Well, you know who is an even smarter man and also currently in Florida right now, a man who wisely positioned himself in Florida during the winter, the House of Worship designer, At All Pro Sound. Where did that Scottish accent come from? A Sweetwater company. Clint All. Clint, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me here.
Was that just like a super mouthful for you there, Blake? I mean, he is the House of Worship designer at All Pro Sound, a Sweetwater company.
Here's what happened.
Is that hard?
Here's what happened. There was so many sentences and so many words. I kind of congratulated myself 70% in my mind. I was like, I'm doing pretty good.
And like you warned me before this episode that you have had an ungodly amount of beans and broccoli lately.
Well, during the all staff Christmas party, I was so stressed, I started chugging the can of beans. I was stress eating. Another story for another time. Clint, welcome to the podcast. We're excited to have you with us. You think you can pull this lie off on us on these five truths and a lie?
Maybe.
Maybe. We'll see. And I'm very excited to test your knowledge of pop culture through these five truths and a lie, Blake.
I shouldn't have thrown a shot at you at the beginning, should I? Number one, threw a party and hired DJ Zazzy Jeff to be the DJ.
Gosh. Read that again. What's that word?
Zazzy? Jazzy. Jazzy.
Blake, what is wrong with you? Blake, okay.
We're trying to find out.
Aside from what is wrong with you, who is DJ Jazzy Jeff?
I don't know. That sounds like a TikToker.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
I watched a couple episodes on Nick at Night.
Okay, that was Will Smith's best friend.
Oh, okay.
And a famous, you know, hip-hop artist in the 90s. Gosh, I'm so disappointed in you.
That's great. Number two, got arrested for pouring salt on a golf course.
Is that something you'd get arrested for, Blake?
Toby, I get arrested for other things. Number three, almost burned down my house.
Okay.
If he had thrown the salt on his house, he could have prevented it from getting burned.
Who of us hasn't almost burned down their house?
Not I. All right. Number four, I used to own a flooring business. Number five, I love animals and have four pets. Toby, when you tell people you have pets, do you say you have one because of Ellie or do you say you have two because of Ellie and me?
I wouldn't count either of you as pets, honestly. Nuisances, yes.
Gracious. Number six, went swimming with sharks once.
Blake, have you been swimming with sharks?
I have kayaked with alligators. That's as far as I'm ever getting to the wildlife.
Well, these are fun. I don't have a leaning yet.
I'm going to go with got arrested for pouring salt on a golf course. My guess is for whatever reason, he got in a lot of trouble, but didn't get arrested. Like there's some dumb rule there that we're going to find out about.
Okay, I'm going to say he did not own a flooring business. So we'll see what, you know, he doesn't look like a flooring guy. He looks like a roofing guy to me. Like he lives on top, you know?
Oh, what a good line. All right, Clint, we're locked in. I've got the salt and he's got the flooring. Did either of us get it?
You're both
wrong. Ah!
Oh, which I was hoping to do because I do listen to the podcast from time to time and I enjoy the banter back and forth of who is ahead of each other in the winning of these. But no, both of those are true.
And Blake, we're early in 2024. So like we're kind of, you know, a fresh start, essentially.
That's right. And now the guest is racking up points.
Yeah. And this is disappointing to me, Clint.
Okay. So how did you get arrested for pouring salt on a golf course?
Well, we need to know the lie first.
Oh, what was the lie?
Well, technically, the lie is I went swimming with sharks once.
Is that?
But the truth to that is I was in a cage with sharks, but I didn't swim. I just sat there.
That's a sneaky lie, Clint.
Yeah.
That's a lie by somebody who listens to the podcast and knows how to lie properly.
I was writing these, and I told my wife I was going to lie and say I love animals and have four pets, because that's also kind of a lie, because I hate cats, and we have two cats.
But, you know. That's just like Blake.
I love
every day
dad.
There's a point that I say, why do we have these again? And, you know, why am I having to replace carpet in bedrooms? And why am I?
And that's what I say about Blake all the time. And he also pees on the carpet all the time.
Well, the bathroom was clogged a lot in our early days of Church Gear. Okay. So how did you get arrested for pouring salt on a golf course? Is this like one of those random rules you see in list of like dumbest rules in states?
No, it was really dumb, man. I was like 19. I had too much time on my hands. And me and a friend decided we would pour salt on the 17th green right before a senior PGA tournament. And if you didn't know this, salt kills grass. Ah. So we put a big bullseye around the hole so that they could make sure they knew where to aim at. We did not actually get caught on site doing it. We turned ourselves in and, yes, got arrested, got handcuffed, sent to jail for the probably 12 hours and then, you know, paid restitution and I could still get into Canada.
You turned yourself in, huh?
Yeah. So somebody heard us talking about it. There's $1,000 reward about it. And we weren't going to let them get the reward. So, you know. And if you turn yourself in at that point, you know, you have remorse and, you know.
Did you get the reward?
Everybody's happier. I did not get the reward. I paid the money.
That'd be brilliant.
I would have a friend turn you in and then use that to pay the restitution.
All right, Clint.
They almost let us go, but they said, well, my groundskeeper's really mad. And if I don't let them have them arrest you, he will quit. So.
All right, I'm going to, what could I threaten to quit about to get someone arrested at Church Gear?
Clint, can you explain to Blake who DJ Jazzy Jeff is?
So have you ever heard of The Fresh Prince?
I have watched a couple episodes. I never saw the whole season. I binged the whole Office.
The Fresh Prince was DJ Jazzy Jeff and The Fresh Prince. They wrote songs before he was on TV. They were a, you know, Billboard number one producing act, and DJ Jazzy Jeff was in the show with him. And anyways, I was used to production manage a festival, and the last year of the festival, Foo Fighters were headlining, and it was the end of their Wasting Light tour, and we threw a party for them next to the festival, and I hired DJ Jazzy Jeff to do all the DJ for it, and hung out with Dave Grohl and the rest of the guys, and it was a lot of fun.
I've read Will Smith's biography and he talks about it, and I don't remember exactly how it worked, but I feel like when he pitched The Fresh Prince and they were kind of doing casting, like he said, you know, they were auditioning people to play his best friend, and he's like, you know, there is nobody else who can play this except for the real person. The character is written after DJ Jazzy Jeff. And so he's in, you know, several episodes. And Blake, I don't know if you remember, like the quintessential moment with him is he was always thrown out of the house by Uncle Phil.
I remember they had an emotional scene together where they hugged and said all they loved each other.
Blake, we're going to have to give you more homework to catch up on pop culture over the last 30 years.
Clint, I just heard I get to watch Fresh Prince on Company Time because it's content.
Nope.
I mean, he's kind of canceled right now, so you might be able to get out of it just because, you know, slapping people.
Yeah,
That's a good point. So then,
hey, I don't agree with the, you know, violence, so I'm not going to watch it.
There we go. yeah, Clint, I think the last one we really need to zero in on before we move off of these, which have a great set of truths and lies, by the way, is how did you almost burn down your house?
When I was in fifth grade, I was playing with matches in my bedroom, and I remember it was right before Christmas, and we I got called to dinner. I thought I put everything out and burnt my whole room down. And if my stepdad had not busted the windows down and tried to put the fire out with a water hose from outside, our whole house would have burnt down.
Oh my goodness. that is just it's got me quaking in my boots. I had the fire department called on me when I was like 8, maybe. I was trying to make a fire behind the tree line. I was not in the forest. I was, you know, I'm trying to do something I'm not supposed to. I'm hiding, but I'm in the forest and I'm trying to make a little fire just to prove I can do it. And my grandma doesn't tell me to cut it out, doesn't yell at me, just can see what I'm doing and just goes, this idiot, and calls the fire department right then. I'm like, grandma, give a guy a warning.
How do you know you're redneck? Grandma calls the fire department on you.
Well, at least it wasn't the cops. Okay, speaking of the cops getting called on you, we heard that's not a transition that works. Give us some of your tech background. We know you've worked at Bethel and you've toured with some of the biggest names in Christian music, and now you're with All Pro. So how'd you get started in tech? How'd you land that job at Bethel?
That's actually a pretty cool story. When I was 16, 17, became a Christian, wanted to volunteer at the church because my best friend was on the worship team and can't sing, can't play an instrument at all. And started learning how to do sound at my church on a powered PV mixer.
Yes.
Was probably not a church gear device as you guys would actually pay for anymore, I'd imagine.
Those are the one of the ones that we bless another ministry with it. It passes through.
I became pretty capable quick. I wouldn't say any good because I was probably not very good at all, but dedicated, probably to a fault became a bit of a obsession to only, you know, that was my goal. I figured out that's what I'm going to do with my life when I was a senior in high school. And I was in a tiny town outside of Pensacola and there is no real pathway to have a career with it, but somehow I figured it out. I worked part-time at my church and this is, you know, I'm pretty old now. So I graduated high school in 96. So from like 96 to 2000, I worked part-time and full-time for a little while. But at the time, there was no one in the area besides me that worked part-time at a church because it was all volunteers back then. Nobody got paid. And so did that and, you know, worked hard and served the church. And I loved it. And one time a band came through to our church, did like a smaller brand new artist, you know, in CCM, and they did a show at our church, and I mixed front house for it, and they thought I was cool and asked me if I wanted to go on the road, and I said sure.
Cool. It like the next day, like they said, hey, you want to go on the road with us tomorrow?
They asked me what I wanted to do with my life, and I said I want a tour. I want to, you know, this is what I want to do, and this was in 2003, and so they were a brand new artist on, you know, had a bunch of Dove Award nominations and toured in a van and trailer, which was really cool. And they called me like 2 weeks later, said, hey, we're coming back through. You want to join up with us? I said, sure. I quit my job, packed all my stuff into my buddy's storage, moved out of my house, and went on tour.
What artist $500 was it?
A month. The Rock and Roll Worship Circus.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, you mentioned about how I got to Bethel. The funny thing is the singer of that band and the guitar player ended up working at Bethel full time. And when they needed a production manager, they called me, and that's how I got the job. And all, there's a lot in between that, but, you know, did a lot of different things in between that. But that's how it happened. Chris Greeley, who's one of my best friends, who's a renowned mix engineer, produced half the Bethel records, mixes all of the records and a lot of other artists and stuff like that. And then Gabriel Wilson, who also produced he's produced a John Mark Millen record, Martin Smith, a couple of Bethel albums as well.
And obviously that's a huge, geographical move from Pensacola over to Northern California. And how long did you end up staying at Bethel?
5 years I was there. I moved there in 2013 and moved to left in 2018. Loved it. Probably one of the best decisions ever made in my life, both spiritually and career, you know, of course. But the spiritual impact on it for me was pretty profound. It was hard to leave, but being, although we had kids, young kids and grandparents, you know, living in Florida, trying to get to do any kind of family thing was challenging. So eventually we just decided it was time to move to back over to the East Coast.
And you ended up touring with some of the biggest names in the Christian music industry. Who were you out with?
Yeah, I when I left Bethel, I started touring with For King Country for about a little over a year. Another great experience, amazing band. I don't know if you guys know this, but they're both Joel and Luke are the younger brothers of Rick at St. James, mm-hmm. and they were the crew for her when she was touring. So they get it. They get like everything, all the aspects of production. On some weekends when it's Sunday and we're headed home, they'll actually shower up and then come out and help load out, even at the arena level, things like that. It was pretty awesome family to be a part of. And then I started working with Amanda Cook. I managed her for about a year and was touring with her and with Hillsong Worship for all of 2018.
Okay. Yeah, some definitely fun artists. I know, if you're born into the Smallbone family, then you definitely have a good shot of getting into Christian music. They've produced some of the, you know, most, influential Christian artists out there right now.
I mean, some even say it's in their bones.
Ha ha ha, Blake. Oh my gosh. Clint, do you want to fire Blake for that terrible dad joke?
Whoa, I haven't been fired this year yet. All right, let's keep it chill.
I mean, if I could, I might, I don't know. I have to think about it.
Has the guest ever fired you, Blake? Have we ever given that opportunity?
Probably. I mean, just know you got the bullet in the chamber. Should you got the matches in your pocket if you ever want to burn me down on this episode.
Nice.
So Clint, now you're working at, with All Pro and, Sweetwater. And I assume you're doing a lot of sort of consulting and system designs. Like, did a lot of that information in your head come from your days at Bethel? What did you learn from that experience that now you can help apply to designing systems?
I mean, it came from everything. Before I went to Bethel, I did some integration work. Even while I was at Bethel, I worked as a consultant with another company installing. When people ask me advice for career and things like that, I tell people to diversify as much as possible. Especially you, Blake, you probably should diversify.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to figure out what I'm gonna do after this.
Everybody I know that's been successful is good at many things, not good at one thing. I never wanted to be the front of house guy that got old and all you could do is mix and be grumpy and mix, you know. So I diversified, was a tour manager, production manager. I owned a flooring business. I got a lot to fall back on. But it actually made me understand systems in a different way, not just in, I did a lot of touring. So a lot of touring guys want to only integrate stuff in the touring way, which sometimes is great. And I love that. But having to learn kind of all the different facets of it was really important. So yeah, when I 2020, when COVID hit and I make the joke, I was like, Mr. T, I needed work. And I reached out to All Pro and they graciously hired me and moved back down to my hometown, which is where I'm at now and where I grew up and where my wife's family is, and settled down here. And I, use everything I've ever learned. I worked in electrical when I was 18 full time, when I was part time at the church, and now I know power. So it's, and understand how power works in a building, so I can consult with the electrician and things like that. So it's pretty cool. Everything we learn should prepare us for the future,
Yeah, it's amazing interfacing with so many production people and learning like how varied their skill set is just because the sheer variety of things that come at them any given week. Yeah, you might have to rig up an LED wall, or you might have to run some new electrical, or you might have to whatever. It's yeah. I think you're diversifying on the job whenever you're in church production.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything you do, really, if you're doing anything hands-on, you're going to diversify like that.
So, you know, Clint, we're not doing this as any sort of, you know, advertisement for your company or anything. You're coming on as, you know, just somebody who's been around the church for a long time and now works for a great integrator. I see this all the time in, you know, the forums on Facebook and other online places where churches will just say like, hey, we're in this area, we need an integrator. And you'll see, you know, 400 hands go up. And so the choices are limitless. And as we all know, some companies are built to do right by churches and some companies make questionable decisions or individuals make questionable decisions. How would you advise churches, you know, how to vet an integrator and how to decide, you know, who to go with, what to look for in that?
It's interesting. All integrators do great work and all integrators do bad work. All of them. Us, we've made jobs that didn't work out as good as it should have. We've had jobs that go tremendously well. Every integrator has goods and, you know, a good point and a bad point to where they're at. I think the most important thing is to become knowledgeable about what you're trying to do. Because at the end of the day, if I'm hiring an integrator to do any kind of work, it doesn't matter if it's electrical, HVAC, anything that we're trying to get done in any kind of building, you know, setup, because all integration is construction. That's the business we're a part of. If you don't know anything about what you're trying to do, it's not going to help you. So I would really, you know, the best people I've ever worked with know exactly what they want. And an integrator is sometimes having to guess to figure out what you're going to want now and what you're going to want long term. And that's the hardest part about it. And, you know, we've had projects where, you know, church hires a new technical director in the middle of the project and they go, we don't want any of this stuff. And we're just like, oh, well, we're sorry. The guy before you did. And we've already bought all this stuff and I'm not sure what to do to help you. We want to figure it out and make you happy, but you know, there's so many things that are outside of our control. And most of the time I feel, and I was one of these, I was a person who, you know, didn't trust any integrator at all. I wanted to do it all myself. And, you know, and because of that, I didn't grow. But the best thing you can do is learn about what you're trying to do as much as you can. Get multiple bids, but mostly have multiple conversations, because every conversation you should learn something from somebody. And, you know, build, you know, I've had worship pastors that I've worked with in the past that didn't have a technical director that I was floored by how understanding they were to what we were trying to do and understanding the business. It's tough, you know, if you can hire somebody that can, if you don't know and you can hire somebody that can just help you manage the nuances of everything, that you know, that works as well. We work with a lot of people like that and it's amazing.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's a perfect integrator out there. I think some of the best have their bad days. And I think a lot of times the bad days are a lot of different other issues. You know, we have a project that going on right now that it's finishing amazing. It's going to be an amazing project, but the general contractor was very difficult. And, you know, that almost made the whole thing collapse. And there's so many little things that happen in between. There's not really a secret. I hate to say that. I'd like to be able to say, this is what you should do. But, you know, if it was, then we'd, you know, everybody would figure that out really quickly and every project would be awesome.
Well, there might not be a secret, but I do hear you having some themes in that. It sounded like two things. It sounded like, one, have a lot of conversations with a lot of people. But then secondly, it sounded like really dial in and know what are you trying to accomplish, know what you want, because that'll allow you to pair well with an integrator that can provide that. It sounds like if you don't know what you want, or if you are coming in mid-project, like that's going to be kind of tough.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
That happens actually. A lot? Yes. I don't understand that. Like, if Toby would have fired me mid-rebrand, like, well, that would have been nuts. Like, I mean, why does that happen?
I don't know. It's the church. The church. It mostly happens in churches, but even in mainstream, we did a club where we finished out the project, did a first event with them, and they still don't have any staff at all. So when we're done,
wow,
like they've got to just, whoever they bring on is just kind of figure it out unless they, you know, hire us to come out and train them again.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many churches I get to, and like, they will, you know, they'll give me a tour of the production system. They'll show me certain things and they'll kind of be like, yeah, this was before my time. And it's a common theme. And Blake, we've talked a lot on this podcast about just, you know, consistency and burnout in church production culture. And so, you know, there's a lot of turnover in church production where, you know, the old production director wanted it this way and did it that way. And then the new person comes in and they're just sort of grandfathered into the other person's opinion. It's a tricky thing.
Yeah, it's tough. I've been in that situation and, you know, when I got to Bethel, I inherited something that wasn't what it was, what it is now. And it took me 4 years to just build the infrastructure to get it to where when I left, handed it off to Drake, he was able to, you know, install LED walls. We couldn't do that 5 years before that because the infrastructure wasn't there. And, you know, it's real important to, you know, to try to think about the long term. But a lot of times, you know, a lot of church tech guys that I've come across, no fault to their own, they're just like me. They only knew with the world they lived in, and that's how they designed it. And then they leave, and then somebody else comes in, and they go, "Oh, I never wanted this way." It's a bit of a cycle, honestly.
Yeah.
And we try to do our best to mitigate it. It's, you know, good challenge.
And I love the sentiment of having conversations ahead of time and knowing what you want and doing some research. I think if anybody throws out a comment on Facebook and says, "Hey, does anybody have an integrator to recommend in, you know, Greenville, South Carolina?" Well, first of all, have you gone to any other churches in your town and met with their production team or their worship team, seen what they've done, asked, "Who do you guys use?" Build community within you and go visit the other churches and start to get an idea of, "Oh, I love that. I don't like that." And then Clint, do you find yourself managing expectations on a daily basis where they come and they say, "Hey, I saw the Hillsong tour and that's what I'm looking for. And we have a budget of $13,000.
Yeah. I want a new PA and yeah, exactly. It's always the lowest budgets, but most of the time you can mitigate that when you just actually have a conversation about what they're trying to do. And the other thing I forgot to mention is, service. If the one big question I can say is without a shadow of a doubt is, how is your integrator going to take care of you after the project? Because I worked with them before. One of the ones I worked with, we were terrible at service and we lost clients because we couldn't take care of them. And I think that's a really important thing, is when something goes wrong, you find issues 6 months down the road, is somebody going to be able to take care of you quickly? You know, that's a big thing.
Sounds like then there's another tip right there, is really kind of vetting that integrator along the process, like directly asking them, but then also kind of getting a vibe of, do I think that they're going to help me once this is, you know, turnkey? Are they going to turnkey and leave? Or are they going to turnkey and, you know, help me with the maintenance on this vehicle? I also heard like another tip I think that you were giving there, which is build it for you and build it for the next guy. Cause you might be the guy in the chair today, to go back to our intro story, but you probably won't always be the guy in the chair. So are you kind of talking that through with people as you're like trying to guide their more, when they get real specific on something, you're like, that might work for you, but might not work for others. Like, is that a tough thing to guide them through?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it always depends on that person you're talking to, you know, on how you kind of navigate that. But you don't want to say, "Hey, you're not going to be here," you know, and odds are, like you guys did your when you were going through the salary tech stuff, I believe you also did a poll on how long they had worked at different places. And the turnover is for a full-time guy is pretty high. The part-time, you know, half volunteer, half part-time guy, they usually last a little longer, I think, because they're usually pouring into the church on a whole, not just looking at the career. But yeah, it's the you know, it's a bit of a short life cycle for people. So that's how I always look at things, is who's coming after me? How can I set this up for when I leave? You know, if I ever do leave.
Yeah, I've seen a trend recently, which I absolutely love. Obviously, all of us have our opinions of what we love most. I mean, Blake, you and I were talking about, you know, Digico versus Yamaha in the beginning. And, you know, obviously both great boards, but like somebody might want something very specific because that's what they love. But you've got to think, A, you know, how many volunteers around different venues, around how many campuses, and are we going to have an infrastructure that makes sense so a volunteer can move between the things, and training makes sense and consistency makes sense. And then also when I hand over the keys, because no matter how long I'm here, I'm going to hand over the keys at some point. Am I handing over the keys to like my baby, or am I handing over the keys to a system that makes sense for the church that somebody can come in and have success immediately? So I think that's something to absolutely consider.
Yeah, I had a friend tell me that they did a huge install at a church and all high end gear, and it was amazing. I mean, it was really done well. And the guy who knew all the gear left a month later, and nobody knows how to use anything now. And it's like,
that is painful.
Millions of dollars. Yeah.
Ooh.
It's really sad. You know, so like, and that's the big thing too, is like when you're doing a project, you got to also remember like, this is coming out of the tithe, and that's a big responsibility. So when you're picking these things out, it can't just be because I want it. It's got to be because this is the best product or the, you know, the best setup for the church, not for me. That makes sense.
Yeah, my best friend's a worship pastor, and they just got all of their rooms on Allen and Heath boards. Like, they're all now the same board. And he just, like, the sigh of relief, his shoulders sagged when he was like, Blake, I'm so happy to have all the boards are the same. Because, yeah, they're volunteers. They do one training. They're good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I got to Bethel, Bethel's a crazy place. It's not unlike any other church. The busiest day of the week when I was there was Tuesday, not Sunday. Because they have multiple colleges, elementary school, youth, young adults, all this stuff that operates all during the week. It's really insane. We have all these different rooms that have different setups in them. And when I got there, every room had a different type of console. Every single one. There was like 9 of them.
Wow.
So, and I had no budget. I didn't say no budget. I had very little budget. We actually operated extremely fiscally efficient. And I ended up putting in Behringer X32 racks and compacts and everywhere so that everybody could learn one system and go to every other room.
Yeah.
Fiscally, what did you say that was, Clint? Give me that again.
Efficient.
Fiscally efficient.
Yeah, when Toby gave me my budget for this season, he's like, I want you to run fiscally efficient. That's funny.
Yeah, I could never ask for more. We didn't have capital spending for big purchases. We had to operate in our yearly budget. Which is more than most churches still. I mean, obviously it's going to be, but it wasn't what you would think it'd be.
And I love hearing churches that, you know, oftentimes we can think, oh, Bethel, they have unlimited budget. So it's so fun to hear that, like, no, like some of these biggest churches, they have to work a bit creative as well because they're trying to manage finances with, you know, biblical mandates in mind.
Yeah. I mean, the church I grew up in and worked at part-time for 6 years, we didn't have subwoofers. I didn't have a compressor. One day I was like, hey, can I buy a $266 compressor? And they told me, no, we don't have a budget for that. So I get it. Like, I had to learn how to make that work and work as best as it could, that system, you know, with literally zero budget.
Yeah.
You know, I think that helped me a lot down the road, you know, not looking at projects and things just because, you know, and being able to just spend everybody else's money.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of stretching and
easy to do.
There's a lot of stretching and learning when you have to learn a new thing like that. Yeah. Definitely gives you more skills.
And Clint, you get to visit a lot of different churches, see a lot of different things. Are there some of the, you know, some things that stick in your mind recently? You were like, oh, that's cool. That's creative. I'm excited about what they're doing there.
I mean, when I walk into a church and if I get moved by anything, it's usually the culture of the people. Production is, you know, usually during COVID, there was a church up in Portland that had, I think, the coolest live stream where they did a single camera shoot and without like the entire worship. It was amazing. It's called used to be called a Jesus church, but I can't remember what the name of it is now.
Hope they, they rebranded from Jesus church. I mean, that's pretty perfect.
Well, it's John Mark Comer's church.
I don't know if you've heard of it. Gotcha. Yeah.
He's not there anymore now, but they had the coolest, most, again, you know, it was crazy times, right? But it was so vibey and cool. Like, it was single camera shoot the entire worship. And then, but you couldn't tell. It just felt like a small production. I liked what they did for, you know, I can't believe I can't remember the name of the church. Anyways, it'll come to me at some point. But like, usually I'm most impressed by what you do with little, like big LED cameras. It's just money. You know, like, if you have enough money, you can do anything, right? But when I see a church that's like doing cool things, building their own sets and you know, taking a cheap light and doing something really cool with it, like, that kind of thing is always impresses me. I saw a post that Drake Kelch did the other day about using these ADJ Jolt lights for backlighting the audience for film, and they're like super cheap, but they're awesome looking. And like, when you're creatively looking for different ways to do things, that's always really impressive to me. I don't really like the modern LED push in church, like, whereas let's just get a big LED wall and put some content up, because, you know, at the every once in a while you build a pretty cool content piece, but it's really difficult to make content. It's the hardest thing you can do. And so when I see something that's a little more creative, that's usually what I get pretty excited about.
You almost feel like on that subject, you know, we've talked about the sphere a lot recently, and I feel like the sphere created something where technology has literally outpaced humans' ability to create with it. Like, you could do anything in the sphere. Great. I don't know where to go with that, you know?
Right. And they're hiring like expensive companies to build that content.
Yeah.
That content isn't a guy like most, you know, most things that we're around is there's a guy in a little studio just playing around with stuff and making cool piece of content. Or, you know, you have a young video editor who's making different things at the church, but those companies are millions and millions of dollars it costs to build that content. It ain't cheap.
Yeah. And I mean, as you spoke on earlier, being fiscally efficient, I guess it just connects back to the why behind any gear you get. Why do I need an LED wall? Is it going to serve the church's mission, or is it just because I like LED walls? I guess that's a, you know, tough question to answer and one to reflect on.
Yeah, it's pretty important, the why. I think the why and everything's pretty when you're making decisions.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of times when I'm saying why, I'm going, why, God, why? And I'm saying that after a disaster. I'm like, what? Why did this have to happen?
Your segues are funny, Blake.
Well, you know, I'm a funny guy. What can I say? There's different interpretations of that.
And just so the audience is clear, this content does not cost millions of dollars.
Whoa.
Blake and I's nonsense is very cheap.
I'm trying to make it look nice, though, with cheap equipment, just like Clint said.
As they see through the segues of, oh, that was a cheap segue, Blake. But you take it. You take your low-hanging fruit, Blake, and move on to the disaster story.
You know, if you give me a better budget, I'll give you some better jokes.
You're a disaster.
All right. This is derailing. So give us a time when things kind of derailed for you, when you had a tech disaster. You got any tech disasters for us?
Yeah, I mean, you guys asked me this question in the front end, just a little behind the scenes, guys. They'll ask this ahead of time, you know, do you have any of these? And I don't really have a lot of like gear catastrophes.
Well, the reason we ask ahead of time is when we don't ask ahead of time, people make stuff up on the spot. Like, this guy named Daniel Ellis told us quite a lie. And we were like, we really need to start giving these people a heads up.
Yeah. You got to watch out for Daniel more later, right?
Yep.
In 2011 and 12, I got hired to production manage a very big music festival here in Pensacola. By the last year, I was actually a producer of it. Pretty crazy experience that I was not qualified for, but amazing. We had 5 stages: Foo Fighters, Pearl Jam, Zac Brown Band. It was a big. The last year was a really big festival. That's the year that we had that party with that DJ you never heard of. And the gear, the we did have a piece of gear fail, and it's actually a funny story. Meyer debuted Leo at that festival that year, the Leo system. Mm-hmm. There's a terrible video of me talking about how great it is, and again, underqualified to even be voicing it, but they did a big push around it. And during Foo Fighters, the UPS failed that was powering the DSP. Hmm. And so in the middle of the song, the PA cuts out. And the next day, and it happened twice until they figured out it was UPS. They moved power over and it was fine. The next day, a press came out about Foo Fighters are too powerful, or I don't know what it was, but for the sound system and everything. But that actually wasn't the biggest catastrophe that day. The festival went bankrupt in the middle of the festival.
What does that even mean? The Monopoly man show up and say, we're closing you down?
Essentially, the investor said, no, we're not paying out. It had a loss. And wow. I happened to have to be in the room for every time talking to Foo Fighters management, Pearl Jam management. We paid your deposit, but we don't have any more money. Including the hardest part about it for me was all the production vendors, because a lot of them were friends of mine, and I was blessed to be able to work for a lot of years and help make the money back again. But they, there's a company that lost everything they put into the festival, and unfortunately that company didn't pay didn't ask for a deposit, so they got zero.
Yeah,
I didn't get paid. It was terrible. It was one of the, I found out about it Saturday night and had to sit down with everybody Sunday. I don't think I ate for like 2 days. It was the worst thing ever happened to me in production.
Wow. That's horrific. Toby, I don't understand how bills work. Let's just start telling people our investor said no, so we don't have to pay you. That sucks, man. What hogwash.
The guy who, it really wasn't, there wasn't anything malicious behind it, because I knew him really well and I knew the finances of the company really well. He did everything he could to pay everybody, but we're talking about millions of dollars at that point. And in 2012, you couldn't book Pearl Jam for less than $1.5 million. So you're talking about a large amount of money.
Did they not sell enough tickets, really? Is that what it kind of came down to?
Yeah, the tickets weren't as great as they should have been. They weren't far off. The crazy thing about the festival life is there's a point where once you break even, it's a lot. You make a lot of money, and it's not enough tickets and not enough money.
So Blake, I'm wondering, back to the budgeting season, should I remove having Pearl Jam play our Christmas party next year in the budget?
No, Toby, that's essential. We got to start with the essentials.
And I'm sure that Pearl Jam is not 1.5 million anymore.
Yeah, they're like with Pearl Jam inflation, they're up to 3 million.
I'm thinking they might be down to like 500,000, because they're not quite as popular as they were once.
I think it's more.
Well, where you find pearls? It's in the sea. And the other thing that's in the sea is shrimp. And Clint, we'd like to see about that story with Daniel Ellis and, see if this is true, what he said about what happened. Is that the worst disaster you'd ever felt? Or was that chump change?
Man, that was funny. So the story is true. I put a kick me sign on his back, and he got me back really good. And it was really hilarious, because I'm not a big practical joke guy, but I generally am, and I kind of can be reactive. My wife says I don't believe her.
Oh no!
But I was uncharacteristically calm. But I had just bought a brand new Briggs & Riley suitcase. And I don't know if you guys know much about Briggs & Riley, but it's not cheap. And I don't think shrimp smell is part of the warranty. put some, I had already showered for the day, put my suitcase up. So he had put some nice smelly shrimp in my suitcase. Didn't find for at least 12 hours, I think. And I just had a smile and proceeded to post on social media how great he is instead of anything negative, which made it feel worse, which is pretty great. But
Was the shrimp like in a bag, or was it just in your
stuff? It was in a bag. So there wasn't like juice.
Okay.
Or whatever it is that that got in there. But I don't think there was. But once you get any of that smell, it's tough to get out, you know. Luckily, I have a wife who is extremely, and we had two young kids, so she knows how to get any kind of stain or anything out of a piece of clothing. And I still have the suitcase today, and it can't tell.
That was my first question. That's incredible. Are you and Daniel Ellis still friends, or is he dead to you?
Absolutely. He is one of the greatest guys. He felt so bad, and which made it funny. It was like the last night of tour, so we didn't see each other for a while, but he is one of the greatest guys I've been on the road. I mean, most of the people you meet on the road are pretty awesome, but he's very special. He loves the Lord. He's not real opinionated about things, and except for Waves. And I've never had a problem like he has, but you know, to each his own. But he, I don't know. I can't speak. You know, he's just one of the great guys I've met out there, and all.
Toby, Daniel Ellis. I mean, look at this guy. Like, he still loves him this much after all that. Like, what a good dude.
And if you put shrimp in my suitcase, you would be fired, clearly.
Clint, I know what I'm doing for our trip to Philo next year. I'm told that we just booked the tickets yesterday.
Hey, can I fire him for you, Toby?
Yes. Maybe I wonder if Todd Elliott would let you fire Blake on the main stage as like...
Oh, that'd be fun.
And we could raise money to, you know,
what
everybody pays like
for you, Blake, for you know,
$5 to fire Blake. And yeah, we raise money for missions and this would be amazing.
Look, I'm still trying to get a dunk tank in some parking lot for
That's
this.
And it's going to be filled with shrimp juice.
Yes. So Clint, give us a slam dunk of a tech takeaway to wrap us out. What would be something you'd give, you know, the church tech community? You're like, hey, this is my unique piece of advice. And you can't, you know, give us your wife's cleaning methods because that'd be too easy. That's too easy as an out. But you should send that to us. What would you do for a
tech takeaway? She just put it out in the sun. And for like, we lived in Reading, so it didn't rain for like two months.
Oh, yeah.
And she just put it out in the sun and it baked for, you know, a week and it was fine. Crazy, but yeah,
you know, when Toby gets cranky, we put him out in the sun in Florida and it does fix him as well. So maybe the sun is all we really needed in life.
You know, I think when I talk to people, you know, everybody's in a different place and what their dreams and visions in church are and their, you know, tech guys, especially or tech people. I try to always say the best piece of advice I can give is diversify, get out there and do different things. Go out and be a stagehand at the local union, loading in shows in and out. It's hard work and the people are different that are out there. They're also not Christians usually, so it's a great opportunity for ministry. But you learn so much. I spent a year as a house audio in the theater and loading in other productions, never mixing, never doing anything fun. But I learned how to hang every kind of PA, you know, you just learn so much. I try to tell people every time, do as much as you can outside of just where you're at. And don't let church be your only creative outlet. Because when it's the only creative outlet, you obsess over your idea of how things should be or what it is. And that's not healthy. You need to have another outlet for that. Go do some other things. Go make shows at the clubs. You know, find hard work to go do and you'll learn so much. And diversify your career, and don't ever take a job for the money. Like,
you know, Clint, that is some good advice. I am making a good 200K here, so I probably should, you know, not take this job for the money anymore. But
does K stand for 100 now? Did you change that? Is that what's going on? 200 instead of.
All right, math is hard, but that was a really good tech takeaway. Like, seriously, we've heard a lot of goodness around having other creative outlets outside of church because it has, techs have said, that kind of lowered the pressure for them on it being the way they wanted at church and kind of made their church job more enjoyable because they had that other outlet. I think that's really great.
Yeah. The money thing is really important, too. I don't want to go long, but I took the job with the Rock and Roll Worship Circus for $500 a month. That's what I got paid. I said yes to that. That led me to be able to be a part of Bethel and build a real career. And if I never said yes for that, you know, which most people would never, right?
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't be where I'm at now.
See, Blake, this $500 a month I'm paying you might get you to your dream job someday.
Yeah, well, welcome, I mean, I'm at $12 an hour is the reoccurring joke. So I wonder how much that is for a month. But OK, well, Clint, dude, we really appreciate you coming on. Is there anything you want to plug here? I know that, you know, you had a leaking suitcase, but it seems like you got that plugged up and good to go. Yeah, is there anything else you'd like to point people towards?
You know, if you want to, I don't post a lot on social, but, you know, it's my Instagram's Clint All. I think my Facebook is too. I don't go on as enough Facebook very much because it's kind of weird, but I actually love Twitter or X. Sorry, it's X now, not Twitter. But that's because I love sports. But no, I mean, you know, I don't have a whole lot to plug. I'm not hawking anything these days.
Mm. Just a man in his wisdom, Clint All, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for hanging out with us. We hope to see you back next week for more absurd stories, tech takeaways, and overall buffoonery here at the Church Gear Studios.
Okay, Blake, so you're hoping that Clint would share his wife's recipe for getting, you know, shrimp smell out of clothes. Are you hoping to pass that on to your wife so that she can get the beans and broccoli out of your clothes?
Well, it's not just beans and broccoli, Toby. My feet smell medically bad. I bought three different things on Amazon the other day after one look from my wife when she smelled my shoes. So if he would share that, that would be so helpful, you know?
And I feel like your diet in general is just seeping out your pores. So maybe if you started like drinking more water and eating more fruits and vegetables, aside from broccoli, that, you know, things around here would start to smell better.
Remind me to tell you my story about a stranger telling me my pores weren't right on a mountain. Okay. That's a real story. What we're trying to segue here to that we have failed in is, hey, you should share this episode with your other friends, your other tech friends, you know?
But apparently not on Facebook, because that's weird.
Maybe on X.
Apparently. Maybe on X.
X,
yes.
Is fun.
Can you share these things on X?
We're going to find out.
Yes.
And if you have a friend that you just want to text it to, you know, you don't have to share it on social. Just text them and be like, hey, I want you to love me the way that Clint loves Daniel. And if you don't love me that much, I'm going to put shrimp in your suitcase.
And just, you know, our listeners have friends. You don't need to say if you have a friend.
I meant a friend that they want to send it to.
Okay, Blake, I've been working on some jingles for our new website launch. So I've got churchy, churchy, church, church gear.
Toby, what have I told you about singing on the podcast? It doesn't work. But you know what is working? Our new website. You can actually get it to load on your phone. You can actually buy a new piece of gear without your phone bursting into flames.
Well, what if I spelled it out like C-H-U-R-C-G-E-R?
Toby, stop. That is not working. But you know what is working? The search bar on our website. You can actually search speakers and speakers will appear. No joke, that didn't always work.
Okay, what if I just did something like go to churchgear.com?
You know what? That one works.